The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Here we go. It's hour number three of the G-Back Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Hope you're having a fantastic day. 469, what time are you talking Mavs right now? And we want your thoughts at 877-881-1053. And 214, why in Bevo's name would we want to trade Lively? Don't invoke that evil on our Mavs.
Hey, what did Bevo have to do with
this? Smart texture right there from the 214.
You know, I'm...
keep Bevo out of it.
I mean, we don't want to. It was just that we were blown away yesterday that Walchuk said with huge confidence and conviction...
He did.
And he's standing on it still. And Lively, I think, heard it last night and was like, you know what, Walchuk? Let me go prove you right tonight. Let me go score season high. Let me go be a rim-protecting monster. Let me go get some offensive rebounds. He was outstanding. And we love him to death. Borderline in love with him. Right? I mean, but Walchuk said he didn't want to trade him for Giannis.
Yeah.
And that was like, well, damn.
And why is that, Walchuk?
I think Derek Lively is the future. I mean, at what he is, he's 10 years younger than Giannis. I love his everything that he's bringing to the table. Rebounding, defense. I think the offensive game is going to get better. We saw, look, the three-point ability, I don't think is something that we even really are aware of how much that he can bring to the table with that stretch of the floor. We saw a little glimpse of it. Little glimpse, but he hasn't really had to unlock it. He's just kind of waiting. He's waiting for his moment.
But the leadership, I mean, he's composed.
He's composed as all hell.
You like the cut of his jib, so what?
I love the look. I love the makeup. He's exactly the type of guy you want to build the team around. I mean, let's be real. Luka, I love him. He's not the leader, right? Kai's taking over that role. When Kyrie leaves, who's your leader?
That's your heartbeat.
It's Derek Lively. Derek Lively is the damn man. There's two players, Gavin. There's two players. Wemby, Jokic.
On a championship team. Okay, so hold up. On a championship team in the future, where does Lively rank among the best players on said team?
Probably I would go three.
Okay. And Giannis is number one with multiple MVPs.
Giannis is fantastic.
Leading scorer in the sport right now.
Lively with Giannis.
Defense.
Okay, so you know, from my perspective, I don't want to trade anybody.
It sounds like you don't want Derek Lively here.
I'm with you. I'm a big fan of Lively, but I'm open-minded, and number one, because of his constant injuries.
Yeah, but I think with bigs, there's always going to be injuries. Name a center that doesn't have injuries.
Yeah, but there's a scale of them. They don't just all go in the injured pot. I mean, on one side, you have Greg Oden and Sam Bowie, which delivered my PTSD for me over multiple decades. It you know, and it maybe it does in fact shade my thinking on this, but on other sides you have a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or even a Shaquille O'Neal who until after 30 years old was remarkably durable. You know, I think you should consider that. Like, what is out there that is more durable? That is a guy that isn't hurt. But right now the chemistry with this team is so amazing.
Great,
you have youth on your side. Why a win now player trying to capitalize on a championship in the next 2 years when you're looking at it like we have, you know, the next decade? But the injury does have to play at least somewhere in your mind if you're an honest and objective GM. And then, you know, on top of that, I do wonder how committed this Adelson family under the governor, Patrick Dumont, is going to be to spend big. We know Mark Cuban had turned tail on the luxury tax. You know, he became a miserly Scrooge himself. which, you know, unfortunately befalls several sports owners. They think, oh, it's awful hard to win a championship. I'm at least going to make sure I make tens of millions of dollars every year. At that point, they're looking at the team as investment. They should get the hell out of the league. And I'm glad Mark Cuban did. But the Mavs are already spending a significant portion of cash. And in the coming off seasons, guys that are significant contributors to you right now are going to be looking for more money. Like Daniel Gafford at $13 million is a steal.
Yes.
You know, when Lively comes up to get paid, that's going to, now you're, you know, well into the high 100 millions, maybe even approaching the Phoenix Suns in the mid 200s, you know, with their insane payroll. So I think there is a legitimate case to be made that, you know, if we could bring ourselves significantly closer to securing a championship now instead of hoping Lively stays healthy and becomes that player, you know, I'll pick the Mavs to win a championship right now this year. But the matchup with the Celtics is going to be a coin flip or at best.
Yeah,
you know,
at best.
Can you give yourself a player now to at least get the first championship? You still have so many good young players. I'm open-minded to it. So at 877-881-1053, where are you with that? I give four possible answers. Okay, anything but Luka and Kyrie, and then you add Lively onto that, and then just a flat no, you know, which is would be bad fits, you know, with the players. So we start with LeBron James at 877-881-1053. Can't have Lively. I'm gonna draw it at three players there because of his age.
Thank you.
The age.
Yeah.
I think the Mavericks agree with you on that.
Okay, so if you got LeBron and didn't have to give up Lively, that tips the scales massively in your favor. Maybe you sweep the Celtics, right?
Yeah.
He's still good enough, especially playoff. Amongst the other top scorers in the league, LaMelo Ball putting on a hell of a show for the Hornets. That's just a flat no for me. I think LaMelo Ball is a genius level savant basketball talent. His maturity isn't there. He needs the ball in his hand to dominate, and you want to have the ball in his hands.
How about
so he
his
can put
health,
on his show?
His yes. overall health, right?
He just missed a season.
It's a non-starter.
Yeah.
Jokic is just NA, not applicable. They're not going to move on from him. We need, like, you know, I think career-ending type of injuries to his supporting cast because they still have such a foundation of pieces. They figure they're one-off season and a draft away from competing for championships. And until, you know, something blows up or, you know, he insists on playing with Luka, I just don't think it's realistic. Now, Giannis, is there anybody out there that agrees with our lovely Woolchuck at 877-881-1053? This is the home run move. You can have Kyrie. You know, as much as I appreciate what Kyrie has done, you pair Luka with Giannis, whatever you have left, maybe you give Kyrie and Lively for Giannis. You know, I think that team is taking on the Boston Celtics quite as...
I'd say, hey, you take Kyrie and Gafford, you're not going to be able to afford Lively. just leave Lively here.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. That's an interesting one. Would you rather give up Kyrie and Gafford for Giannis as opposed to...
I'm all for Giannis. Giannis is a freak of nature. He's incredible. And the defensive ability there. I would just, I think they've got, the Mavericks have pieces. If I can avoid putting Derek Lively in any trade, I would like to avoid that. Giannis is definitely one where you could get me to sway the other way on that. But there's a very short list of players based on the upside. I think already the impact that Lively's made at just such a young age. I mean, we were talking last year, there were points in the season without Lively, they couldn't win.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a
they wouldn't have won last night without him.
Big time difference maker.
Yeah, but in this instance, in this hypothetical, this insane never would happen hypothetical, those nights you don't have Derek Lively, you have Giannis freaking Antetokounmpo.
Yeah.
So I think that changes things in huge.
I mean, he brought a championship to Milwaukee, the first one since Lou Alcindor.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
But I would like to try and keep Lively, Giannis, Luka. Like that core three right there, I think is championship worthy.
Oh, that's run the league worthy for sure.
If you could be fortunate enough to do that, would your three picks and the rest of your players tempt them? I think any team trading an MVP candidate is going to ask for Lively. That would be like my line.
Yeah, and it might be Lively and Kyrie. Like if we're talking about trading Giannis, this is going to be an astronomical situation.
Kyrie is up there as well. What is he, 34 years old, 33 years old? So, you know, and
P.J. Washington.
We saw against elite defense, you know, how Boston slowed him down. Multiple teams were able to slow him down last year in the glorious playoff run. And I just don't think, you know, Giannis would be slowed down like that. Obviously, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's N.A. Jason Tatum's not going to get moved. Paolo Banchero's not going to get moved. Let's come down here to number 12 on the list and stay in Milwaukee. What are you guys doing with the idea of Damian Lillard?
No, thank you.
I don't think that that's moving the needle much from where you are right now. I mean, I was really excited for the Damianis pairing. I thought, okay, maybe this is, you can get Milwaukee back in the finals. That's just failed miserably. And I love Dame.
The fact that he can't play with Giannis, does that kind of send a red flag to you?
I don't know if he can't play with Giannis. They're starting to
pick up steam a little bit. They've beaten up on some bad teams, but we'll see. To this point, yes, it has been a colossal failure.
Yeah. I just think there's no way you could contend with Kyrie and Dame sharing a backcourt.
No,
you're just getting destroyed defensively.
No, it just doesn't make sense.
It's just the construct of the Mavs team right now. That's just a no thank you.
And Kyrie is such a better fit. Damian is an incredible scoring point guard from three, but Kyrie is doing a tremendous job helping all the role players excel, you know, and I think you need as much of that as possible with Luka also on the team.
I think a lot of this is also growing up a Mavs fan. They haven't been able to ever establish and find a center. Tyson Chandler, that was it. They finally got a guy.
Yeah.
I don't want to lose that.
Yeah, and that year they had Brendan Haywood. They had two.
Yeah.
You know, the similarities between this year's team and the championship team, maybe we should do a player-for-player evaluation and decide which one we think is more talented, because this might be the most talented Mavs roster of all time. Victor Wembanyama, obviously, N.A.
And that's part of the reason why you would probably talk about also not wanting to move on from Lively in any way. That's the argument, is just because what you have Wemby being in your division and everything.
There's one more I wanted to ask you about. Kevin Durant. What if things go crazy in Phoenix? They need to get off contracts. They want expiring deals. They're looking at Kleba and Powell and some added filler. But they need a young piece in your three draft picks to bring in KD. They want Lively, three picks, Kleba and Powell.
No. No, I wouldn't do it for that. I mean, I, as much as I talk about how crazy it is to not do it for Giannis, he's on the very, very short list of dudes I'm trying to throw Lively in on a trade for. So even a guy like that, I'd be like, thanks, but no thanks on KD.
That combination doesn't put you in a championship here?
No, I don't think it would be a bad thing in the short term necessarily, to some extent. Like, you're getting a legit Kevin Durant still, but I mean, he just rolled his ankle last night.
You're talking about really shrinking down
what your winning era can look like here.
Yeah. I do also want to bring up, if you did decide to trade Lively, and that's the player, like, a lot of teams are calling. We're seeing a lot of articles about it. And whenever you see smoke like that, Mark Cuban did a great job in his last 5 years of not letting anybody talk. It's clear his successors don't have as much of a hard line in the sand about it, because when you see that much, it's because conversations are happening and agents are talking and players are talking and word is getting out. So I don't think we're bringing this up out of left field. If you're wondering, like, whoa, what's going on? Let me add this. Clint Capella more available than ever. Still averaging a double-double in 24 minutes per game. If you would have to move on from Lively, you could go back to Atlanta, bring back your two-center combination. I think the two-center combination is just about mandatory, considering what you have to contend with for Denver. It was the difference for Minnesota last year.
Yeah, and especially in this scenario where you can see, as awesome as Gafford is, Lively being so much better.
Yeah.
And so you're moving on. If you're in the scenario where you're moving on from Lively, you're moving away from clearly the better one. I loved the way Istak Franco wrote about it after last night's game. You have Lively going a season high 32 minutes, and Memphis is the NBA's best paint scoring team. And so you saw Lively's length and mobility, both in helping and recovering to contest floaters and other shots in the paint. And it was crucial because it limited some of their damage inside. They went 50% in the paint when Lively was on the court, 64% in the paint when he was on the bench.
Wow.
In those 16 minutes. So, and then, of course, he goes 7 of 10 for 17 points. And then on the boards, 6 offensive rebounds, 11 total. The effort, the energy, all that kind of stuff. It's through the roof with that guy.
You can see the deterrent he is, you know, and you can see his dominance with rebounding. His length comes into play consistently on both ends of the court. And it creates and takes away space in a big way. Takeaways from yesterday's game. Luka, unreal. You know, since coming back, he has looked like an MVP. I don't think he's going to win it, because I think they're going to want to give him games off. That's what this roster will allow them to do. They should be the freshest team entering the playoffs. Lively, we talked about him. He was a huge spark in the second quarter with the three dunks. But Klay Thompson, not good. Hit just one of his 5 shot attempts, 0 of 3 from 3-point range in his return. I think this might be the player that you're most interested in trading. Could you do that? Could you pull that off? Could you move Clay after him being your big free agent score? You missed him at all?
Two years in a row where you sign a guy in the offseason that's the big prize, and then you flip him at the deadline. I wouldn't put it past Nico at all.
Yeah.
What can you really get for him?
He just has a status about him, right? Clay Thompson?
Yeah, the name value. I mean, the thing is with Clay, at least for me, it was never about the regular season and how he looked. It was all about, does he end up making that difference in, say, a finals where you really needed some big-time three-point shooting and nobody could do that? Can Clay slide in and fill that role that they missed?
Yeah, but I cut you off there, Chief. You're going to ask, what could you get for him? I don't think anything.
Yeah.
I think you're looking to bail from the salary if you can in any way.
Maybe the Lakers want to be like, that's the LeBron trade we'll make.
we'll take Clay.
Yeah, another old wing. I love it. We got to run. Top 10 at 420 coming up next. Well, Chuck, where are you taking us?
Well, it's National Cookie Day. We got the top 10 best kinds of cookies. And is this college looking to hire Lincoln Riley away from US?
Hey, guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
See, that's next.
Welcome back, Nation. It is time now for Woolchuck's Top 10 at 420 segment. Is brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one is in a car truck wreck, contact the Frankels. Get a free consultation, 214 or 817-333-3333. Hit frankelfirm.com. It's also brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. Here he is, Zach with an H. Your Woolly Bully.
What is your favorite cookie? 877-881-1053. National Cookie Day. It's a hell of a day. But there is some college football news. Jackson Arnold hitting the transfer portal. Former Denton Geyer quarterback, Oklahoma Sooner. So he's going to be leaving Norman. Saw our college football expert, Carter Freeman. He's already on the Twitters talking about that. I don't think he's too upset about Jackson Arnold hitting that transfer portal. But speaking of Oklahoma, former Sooners coach Lincoln Riley, now at USC, saw today, according to The Athletic, UCF, Central Florida, is making inquiries about Lincoln Riley for its head coaching opening. I wonder, like, how does this get out there? UCF, why do they think they have a chance at Lincoln Riley? Maybe that's because Lincoln Riley's worried about, should I just get ahead of this? Am I going to get fired by USC?
That's what Gus Malzahn did.
Yeah.
He got out there and got he went to being an offensive coordinator at Florida State.
Right?
Yeah.
So here's Paul Feinbaum talking about Lincoln Riley. You know he already got one coach fired. Lane Kiffin will never let him forget that.
USC
but
coach
ended up being a blessing for Lane Kiffin in his career. Lincoln Riley, why is he still the head coach at USC right now, Paul?
Would someone in California explain to me why Lincoln Riley, as of almost noon Eastern time, is still the head coach at Southern Cal? What has he done? He had the one season, Dan, with Caleb Williams. Last year was, I thought that was a disaster, but then again, I forgot about this season. And considering their record is .500, that includes a win over LSU in the opening game. I mean, I don't know when I've seen a coach underperform. I was wondering early in the year, maybe somebody in the NFL would hire him, but hire him as what? I mean, maybe a coordinator? I think he has completely outlived his usefulness at Southern Cal. He shouldn't be there any longer. Continuing on, especially now in the portal era, what's the appeal? Remember when he moseyed out there a couple of years ago and was going to make that place sizzling in Tinseltown? But I mean, I don't get it. Listen, I know I get accused of calling for coaches firings all the time. I really don't. But in this case, I think it's legitimate. USC is one of the golden names in college football, and now it's become a laughingstock.
Well, and it kind of was a little before Lincoln even got there. Really, since Pete Carroll, they have not been relevant. But yeah, that was kind of at least at quarterback, you think you're going to have that figured out. Now Miller Moss is hitting the transfer portal. I mean, at Oklahoma, he was getting the Jalen Hurts in the portal, right? Kyler Murray transfers from A&M. He was able to get these guys. It doesn't look like that's carrying over to USC right now. And if that's going to be the case, maybe Paul Feinbaum's got a point. Maybe UCF is seeing the writing on the wall here and thinking, if they don't want you, we'll take you. And he goes back to the Big 12.
Yeah, for sure. I would. I understand UCF doing that, and I'd be, if I was a USC fan, I'd probably be wanting something else as well. Like you said, it's like when a defensive minded head coach and the defense all of a sudden sucks. It's like, okay, how long can we go about this? Yep. And even with Caleb Williams last year, it was not good.
Tough spot for USC because of how much success he had at OU, you know, and you're like, are we moving on from a guy or is he just not a good fit here? You know, the transfer portal is important, but do you have a foundation established with the high school coaches and the recruiters that can help you get that, you know, obviously all the local talent that you need still to build a football team? I don't think he's got it out there.
Man, did everyone lose in that transaction?
You big time. Just everybody lost.
Yeah. Yeah. Oklahoma. Yeah. Everybody, yeah.
Literally every single entity that was involved there would love that one back.
But, it, you know, if I needed a coach in the Big 12 footprint, I'm going to him.
If I'm UCF, I mean, this is a no-brainer. Absolutely.
It's just, it's wild, like the two-year decline here from Lincoln Riley. It's wild. But I still would definitely hire him as a coordinator, like, Feinbaum was saying the NFL, still think he's one of a brilliant offensive mind. As an offensive coordinator, if things don't work out, yeah, sign me up for that. I'd still kick tires on that idea.
But how good of a salesman are you at taking kids from other colleges? You know, is your NIL money in line? You know, like Nick Saban was dominant. Was he cut out for this evolution of college football when the chessboard changed? Nope. So, you know, I think those are all factors I would consider as in my decision to move on.
Yeah, we got a message from Brian Kelly here at LSU that we need to give more money. He's like,
you're thinking to yourself, why?
No, I wonder
where y'all rank just in terms of.
Yeah, but he's actually saying, listen, if you want to compete with the Alabamas and the Texas and, you know, the Ohio States and stuff, he goes, we need more money. We don't have enough money. It doesn't.
Did he mention SMU in that?
No, he didn't mention SMU. They raised a lot of money at SMU when they went to the ACC. But the thing with Brian Kelly, I can understand it. He's like, listen, it's not one or two people that need to give all the money. You know, we all need to pull our fair share of weight here. And, you know, I just wonder if some of these coaches aren't cut out for that, or if they're not cut out for the fundraising, the intensity of it.
Well, did Kelly sell you? You going to up your givings?
I wish I could. I absolutely, no, I give money to the school, but yeah, if I were somehow to be a millionaire, sure. I'd absolutely, yeah, I'd have a building named after me over there or something. But yeah, that's it. This is what football's become. And I just wonder if some of these coaches don't want to be a part of that. Don't want to be don't want to have to fundraise and deal with, you know, like at USC, your starting quarterback leaving after. You know,
well, hell, the Georgia safety, right?
Yeah,
this is a team getting ready to play an SEC championship game. He's like, Coach, I'm hitting the portal. Kirby's like, all right, well, then you're no longer playing for us. That's a starting safety.
Yeah,
that's saying bye bye.
I think
it's crazy.
I think some of these coaches just want to coach. You know, I mean, we were talking. Gavin asked a question earlier when we were in the room pre-show. Is the National Signing Day mean anything to you? What was our answer?
It's lost it.
Yeah.
Now.
We're like,
it
nah.
Portal when's, day matters
when's portal
more.
Day? Yeah. Yeah. When's that?
And congratulations to all the kids out there that signed today. Yeah. I mean, it's still a great moment for them and their families. But yeah, because it's like next year they could look up and leave. They might not be at that school.
Yeah,
that
they just signed. Exactly. They signed a letter of intent and then, you know, they're not playing at that university anymore.
It's wild. All right, let's get into the top 10 best kinds of cookies, National Cookie Day. Does anybody watch NCIS in here? I got a text.
Back in the day, I did.
Anyone else think Woolchuck sounds like McGee?
The staying power. I don't watch it. I'm going to YouTube it. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Maybe. I don't know if that's a compliment. McGee, or
I think it's Magoo for the Magoo. Record.
Magoo McGee. White chocolate macadamia nut from the 972.
That's a good start. I like the way we came out of the gates here.
And it's underrated, in my opinion.
So good.
Chocolate chips and walnuts or pecans.
Okay. Yes, dude. I mean, what a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And we just had the pecan experience with all the pies at Thanksgiving.
All the pies.
And even the like pies. the sweet potato casserole. The thing that really sets it off is you get those pecans in there, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, they really are special.
Nuts with a cookie. I'm a fan.
Okay, so I think this is a bit of a mouthful, but this has been my favorite cookie over the last few years since my mom's friend Patty Joe brought it over.
Oh, Patty.
If you have a double name and you're a chef, you're pretty good.
Patty gets it done. The butter.
Double name.
She knows.
Works.
chocolate chip raisin marshmallow oatmeal cookie.
Oh, the marshmallows are a magical secret ingredient these Martha Stewart moms are bringing to the table.
I am so happy you said that. One that sounds delicious.
Kind of holds everything together.
And I know you've talked
about chewiness.
Melting glue.
On so sister-in-law baked, and they were gluten-free. I was shocked. It was a s'mores cookie. And the marshmallow just set it off in the middle. Like, this thing was ooey, gooey, soft.
How is that gluten-free?
I don't know. I don't know how she did it, but her husband, my brother-in-law, and, of course, my wife both have celiac. So I've had to adjust to living in a gluten-free household. But these were the best cookies I've ever had in my life, and they were gluten-free. Sign me the hell up. If I can find anything gluten-free that good, I'll eat gluten-free the rest of my life. That thing was outstanding.
I love it, dude. They got that thing dialed now. The gluten stuff, it's so rampant. They're like, we got to figure this crap out.
They're doing a good job.
I might take a shot at that gluten-free, just see how it makes me feel. But I love that it's National Cookie Day, because at about midnight today, I broke down on my sweets.
Oh,
my mom had made this massive batch of chocolate chip cookies, and we were down to like 8 of them in this little bag because Abby and Remy had been tearing them up.
Did you punish all 8?
Housed them.
Yeah, you did.
I felt great.
With milk? Did you go milk with it?
No, I didn't.
Interesting. No.
You go Diet Coke?
It was just water.
were you trading cookie for Metamucil Fiber Thin?
No. I should have. You know what he was doing? He was sitting, I guarantee you, I feel like I know what you were probably looking at the bag. You ate one. You were kind of looking around, grabbed another one, kind of was feeling guilty.
Yes.
Looked at the bag, walked away from the bag.
Yes.
Came back to the bag.
Yeah.
That's how he did just sit there.
Your dead ball's on, except I was taking 2 at a time. I thought, I'll just take 2. Well, and I went back to my bed and ate them.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I'm going, 2 more? Yeah.
Wow.
And then once you get to 4, it's like, I messed up.
Exactly.
Let's just make it a full deal.
Yes.
And I won't eat until noon tomorrow.
And then you're like, screw the kids. I'm eating all 8 of these cookies.
That's right. I knew they would get finished them off by the time I got back.
I believe it's 25% off at TIFF's today as well for National Cookie Day.
You know,
she's still got it, man.
Oh, Tiff's got
it. Tiff's do a great
job.
Rocket. They do a great job.
They might be my number one, other than my mom's chocolate chip cookies and sugar cookies. Aunt Lois's sugar cookies are amazing.
The consistency with Tiff's. Like, you always know what you're getting. It's always going to hit. The raspberry white chocolate from Subway from the 214. The snickerdoodle's getting a lot of love. Lucius.
Subway makes cookies.
Subway's got great
cookies. Dude, you got full-on cookies.
Subway's got great cookies.
Oh, yeah. Subway has fantastic cookies. Dude, so McDonald's, too, man. McDonald's sleep on some good cookies, too.
I'm way behind the game there.
Where do you right now have like a go-to cookie that you're
I'm always like the classics, chocolate chip with some nuts in it. I think it was mentioned earlier,
the nuts are that's a game changer.
I like them boneless too, where it's kind of like they're falling apart some.
Gonna ask
them boneless cookies, bro.
The gooier the better.
I like the soft. I like it as well.
When you're grabbing the Oreos, you use like your middle finger and your thumb and you grab a big chunk like that out of there and we can have some of them. There we go. You got about 6 cookies in one grab.
That's the way. Number 10 best kinds of cookies in the U.S. the fudge stripe coming at 10. Those are delicious cookies.
Those are Keebler, right?
Keebler, yep. 9 is the Thin Mints, the Girl Scout cookies.
Geez, there we go.
Yep, the mint chocolates. Yeah. 8 is the oatmeal cookie.
Slightly chilled, by the way.
Shout out to Reg. I know Reg was a big oatmeal raisin guy. Love the oatmeal raisins.
I love oatmeal cookies are phenomenal.
7 is peanut butter. 6 is white chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah.
The white chocolate chips.
Okay.
Isn't it macadamia or am I tripping?
Nestle makes a white chocolate, little like the little teardrop.
They just drop Jason Williams right in there.
Yeah. But you can throw a macadamia in there, and I'm going to like it more. 5 is the M&M cookies. 4 is Snickerdoodle.
Yeah.
3 are Oreos. Double stuff.
Wow.
Oreos are getting up there. 2 is the sugar cookies.
Yep.
Traditional. But number 1 is absolutely the chocolate chip, and the chocolate chip is number 1 on basically every single cookie list that I could find.
Yeah.
Chocolate chip is tried and true. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves it. I guess maybe you just prefer the white chocolate chips, you want to sub them out.
Sure it changed the game. Chocolate chip cookies. Somebody was selling sugar cookies, just regular doughy cookies.
Yeah.
My man said, how about check this out, though?
Bang, bang. That guy retired early.
All of a sudden, they had to close that stand. Yeah.
We got Jared Sandler swinging for a cause. He'll give us the update on the Rangers offseason and more right here. It's the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. All righty. Thank you, Lucius. G-Bag Nation, 105.3 The Fan. It is time now to talk with our main man, our ace, when it comes to talking Rangers, pre- and post-game show host, play-by-play man, and Rangers insider at Jared Sandler joining us now here on 105 through the Fan. And we got the Swinging for a Cause coming up. You can bid on our table now at 877-881-1053 anytime between now and the rest of the week. Sands, how the heck are you, buddy?
Hey, what's up, Gavin? I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Man, we're doing great. We were talking yesterday about the new catcher, and that's a fun one. I still can't rattle his name off the tip of my tongue. Higashioka?
You nailed it.
Higashioka, let's go.
You crushed it.
And he's got some power, doesn't he?
Yeah, coming off a career year in that regard, and then he kept it up in the playoffs too. They were bounced by the Dodgers, but he had three home runs in that five-game series. So, he will hopefully, even if he doesn't have a 17 home run season, be able to produce at some level offensively to tandem with Jonah Heim. And, you know, the Rangers were clear yesterday that the goal is for those two to kind of be a 1A and 1B. And then, hey, 2 months into the season, if one guy's clearly outperforming the other, then that role might shift a little bit. But, what was clear was that, last year, Jonah Heim appeared to wear down, and he came off a long season with the World Series run. And then Andrew Kisner just wasn't hitting at all. And when the offense was struggling early in the season, and really it never quite totally turned a corner, but especially early in the year, Andrew Kisner struggling, and they kept riding Jonah Heim in hopes that, he could help be a part of the solution. And I just think he ran out of gas. And I think that a Jonah Heim that starts 90 to 100 games, or maybe let's just call it 81 right down the middle, that's going to be a guy who probably gives you a lot more than a Jonah Heim who's asked to start 110 and 120 games. And maybe that's not the case in April and May, but that's probably going to be the case in August and September. And if you're playing beyond September, you want him to have some gas in the tank to be able to give you stuff in October too.
So that's a nice signing. But obviously there's bigger fish to fry, hopefully. How good of a handle do we have on the pitching market and what Eovaldi is worth and if the Rangers are going to be able to swing it?
Yeah, it's tough to know. It does seem like it's a pretty pitcher-friendly market, though, right now. When you look at some of the deals that have already been struck, even not just like the high-end deal that Blake Snell struck, but, you look at some of the mid-tier deals. Pitchers are making their money. And, I don't know how much Corbin Burns signing will impact Nathan Eovaldi, because I think Corbin Burns' age and production is maybe a class above. But, I think you're looking at a number that starts with a 2 annually for Nathan Eovaldi. Not a big surprise, right? But you never quite know how the market's going to shift. And I think with the Rangers, it's a matter of, do they want to commit that type of money to a guy who they know, right? There's a proof of concept there. But, Nathan Eovaldi's not any younger, and he's a guy who, last year his innings production was near a career high for him, and that was only around 160 or so innings. So, I think they probably have to ask some tough questions. Now, I don't think that means they're not in on Nathan Eovaldi, but I don't know that they're, blinders on fully in pursuit of Nathan Eovaldi and no one else is really in their sights, right? I think they're considering all their options and they can come back to Nathan Eovaldi if they feel like that's what's best. Not saying come back as in last case, last case resort or anything, but just I think they want to play the field, so to speak, and see what's out there. A guy like Luis Severino. And then the other thing, Gavin, is, the trade market, I think, is an area in which the Rangers can be active as well, because if you think of their financial situation and also what their current assets are, it would make sense that the Rangers would try and upgrade their roster through the trade market, in addition to trying to make some shrewd moves in free agency.
All right. What is your take, Jared, on this golden at-bat rule? I think it's taken
over. Yeah, I don't like that rule, but I will say this. One, I've seen a prevailing thought that Rob Manfred hates baseball and he's been awful for the game. I don't agree with that. Rob Manfred is the same commissioner who instituted the pitch clock, which is one of the biggest changes and most positive changes that baseball has had in a long time, and some of the other rules that came along with it. I think Rob Manfred has horrible PR skills. I think he has no feel for how to present himself. I think he has no feel for how he comes off to the fans and how important his demeanor is when he delivers a message. And I don't know, that he hates baseball. I think that's kind of a random thing to say for a guy who's the commissioner of baseball. Maybe he does. I don't know. What I do know is that he has made some positive changes. Now, I don't think the golden at-bat rule is something that I want to see. But I heard Bacik talk about this yesterday, and it's something that we've talked about a lot. baseball has a challenge in that, unlike basketball and unlike football, the best players are only a part of the action at a very, very small percentage. And Bacik brought up the point yesterday that in crunch time, in those pivotal moments late in the game, it's kind of just where the lineup falls, right? Whereas in basketball, you can put the ball in Luka's hands or Kyrie's hands and draw up a play. In football, if the Chiefs have the ball in a tie game with 55 seconds left, it's not like, oh, it's the, you know, fourth string quarterback's turn, right? No, it's Patrick Mahomes who is going to have the ball, right? In baseball, you don't have that. The other thing with the golden at bat rule that I think is a little misleading, I don't think that these decisions will come in the ninth inning. I think that teams will look for opportunities to expose a weaker pitcher as opposed to the closer in a pivotal moment, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't think that it would create the drama of Ohtani versus Trout like what you saw in the World Baseball Classic. I don't think that's what you're getting anyway. So I don't like the rule, but I am open to baseball considering ways to better feature their star players. And I don't know what that looks like because I don't know that lineup manipulation is the way to do it. Maybe it is. Again, I don't like the golden at bat rule, but I'm seeing a lot of people say it's the worst. I hate it. I'm never going to watch baseball again. And all I would say to that is, okay, that's fair, but I am at least open to considering ways to continue to improve the game and to appeal to the younger audience. And the younger audience is very superstar driven. It's not let's sit down, appreciate all nine guys in the lineup and watch six, seven, eight, nine innings of a game. It is very highlight based and superstar driven.
I would love to know, Jared, just like on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the stupidest, how stupid you think the idea is and how likely do you think it is?
I don't think the golden at bat rule is likely in the form that it has been conveyed to us right now. I would tell you, Eric, that I would guess if I were to put some money on something that within the next 5 years, there will be some kind of a change to the way things go. And I don't know what that would be, right? Like I obviously the golden at bat rule, I think, was met very negatively, and maybe that was strategic by baseball to put it out there and get a sense of how people would react. But I don't think 1 to 10, I like it. If 1 is the lowest, I like it at a 1.2. I'll give them 0.2 points worth of credit for, you know, having these discussions. So I think one of the biggest problems that baseball has encountered is a lack of willingness to be open-minded and have progressive discussions to evolve the way that football has evolved and the way that basketball has evolved and even the way that hockey has evolved. I don't think baseball up until the last few years had really been open-minded to that. And I don't think the golden bat rule, like I said, as it has been conveyed, is likely to be implemented. But I do think baseball is having active discussions on what changes can be made to improve the game.
Jared, is next week's agenda to try and find bullpen help for the Rangers?
Yeah, I think that's definitely atop the list, especially you consider, remember, Chris Young won the World Series with the Royals on a team that was, I don't want to say carried by their bullpen, but they were more bullpen-driven than starter-driven. Now, that's not to say I don't think Chris Young values the rotation. I think if you look at the rotation that he's already built, he absolutely does. But I think he also understands and values the steadiness of a bullpen, which is, you know, frankly, he hasn't had in the last 2 years. I think he wants to work towards that. So, I think it could be laying the groundwork for potential trade. A guy like Devin Williams, perhaps, maybe the Brewers, who they've never been afraid to move on from a key player, even while wanting to contend, is a guy who maybe they would part ways with. There are a number of relievers who could be available. And then, of course, you know, the free agent market for relievers is another option. A guy like Colin Poche is an interesting name, maybe not as a closer, but as a guy who can help build some depth in your bullpen, a guy who the Rangers were familiar with from last year. Kirby Yates is someone who could come back. But I do think that relief help, Broadus, is of, you know, great importance. And the reality is, you know, you can say that the rotation is more important than the bullpen and the lineup is more important than the bullpen, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree. But I think the Rangers have the most work to do in building the bullpen compared to the other two areas of the team that we just mentioned.
Jared, we're going to take you late if you have the time. I'd appreciate it because you mentioned trades earlier, and I wanting to follow up on that. Is that prospects for veteran players who the team is eating salary on?
I think, Gavin, it could be in a situation where it's a major league for major league, you know, talent for talent type trade. Huh. I think that you know, there's a lot of talent in the lineup, but maybe they want to reshuffle the deck. And, you know, whether that's Adolis Garcia or Nate Lowe, you know, I don't know. But I think that there is the potential opportunity there. You know, Leody Taveras was another name, and maybe, you know, you're not getting an impact player for Leody, but there could be a team out there who sees some value. Maybe, you know, you trade Leody for a reliever, right? That's a deal that I think could make a lot of sense. So, yeah, it could be a prospect situation, and it could be a salary type situation. Maybe you want to move on from Adolis Garcia, have a team take on his salary, and that's really what you're getting in return. You're not really getting much back from a physical asset standpoint. But I think there are a lot of different ways they can go, and I wouldn't be surprised if you see a major league for major league type trade as opposed to your standard prospects for major league talent type of move.
Well, congrats on getting swinging for a cause at Globe Life Field. It was an enchanted experience last year, just unforgettable, and it's back this Sunday. What all do you have in store for the fans that are bidding and arriving?
Yeah, well, first of all, I appreciate all you guys. I couldn't do this without you guys and your help and support and talking about it. So thank you so much. The event will be similar to last year. We've made some changes to the games just to change things up. We'll still have the Wiffle Ball Derby, but our featured game this year, this is something I've always wanted to do, and we have the space to do it, is a three-point contest. And I'm not talking about, like, standing still and, hey, let's, you know, at your own pace, take 10 threes, you know, around the perimeter. This is an NBA style 3-point contest with 1 minute on the clock. Instead of five balls per rack, it's three balls per rack from five spots. And I don't know, whenever I watch a 3-point contest, I always think it'd be something fun to replicate. So we're going to have that with a little twist. After you complete the five racks, if you have any time left, you go to the free throw line, you sit in a wheelchair to replicate the experience for a wheelchair basketball player, and you get to shoot as many free throws while sitting in the wheelchair for bonus points to your score. We'll also, Gavin, soccer, we're not going to have a penalty kick shootout like last year. We're going to have a hardest shot competition. So we're going to, you know, much like a hardest pitch type deal, which we'll also have in the visiting bullpen like last year, we'll also have a hardest shot for soccer. And then, you know, we'll have tailgate type games, games for the little kids too. There'll be a bounce house, face paint. It's an event that, you know, we want to make fit for, you know, people of all ages, but then also interest too. It's not like you have to be really active and participate in all or any of the games. If you want to just show up, mingle, eat, drink, have a good time, hang with some celebrities like Elvis Andrews and Drew Pearson, then you're more than welcome to do that too. So again, we try to create an event that's appealing for everybody. The tables are sold out. If you want a table though, you can bid on the chance at a table with you guys, right? Mm-hmm. Just call in at 877-881-1053. Or you can still buy individual tickets. Those are available. Just go to my Twitter, at Jared Sandler. I've been posting the links for all of that, so you can find that stuff there.
Yeah, and the winning bid gets two tickets to the Rangers and an in-studio visit with the show. So that sounds great.
That's right, yeah. So it's not just the table. There's a whole package that comes along with it.
All right, buddy. Let's go get Rangers.
Let's do it. I appreciate you guys. Thanks so much.
Salute. There he goes. He's at Jared Sandler on X. If you want to track that down, an edition of The Finest is on deck now. Where are you taking us?
Baldy is a Hoffman, and it's all aboard the Mayflower next year in the nation. Hey, it's all aboard the Martin House Brewing Tour. That's right. We're going to be swinging through as a station on Saturday, December 14th. Mark your calendars, ladies and gentlemen. Martin House Brewing Company in Fort Worth. The party's rocking on Saturday afternoon, December 14th. The entire gang's going to be there. It's going to be great. They're best known for the best made pickle beer. Just